And our next speaker, Charlie is homegrown here from Florida, but he's different than our past two speakers and myself. Charlie does not come out of the transportation side, and is coming out of the managed growth side of our governmental side of our business. He's the director of the Division of Community Planning for the Department, Florida's Department of Community Affairs. So, Charlie, please.
Well, thank you for the introduction. I guess I am different. I'm a simple, humble land use planner surrounded by you transportation experts. And it is a little different. It's a little different crowd. It's also different for me actually talking to people from other states. Sometimes I feel like we get too insulated in our planning, and it's good to learn from other states. I get to go to a lot of workshops, a lot of conferences, and get up and talk. This one's not so bad. In 2 weeks, I'm speaking to an assembly of all the land use and environmental lawyers in the state. And that is much more intimidating because they give me a lot of subpoenas over time. But I do work at Department of Community Affairs. I'll tell you, I've been in this business for 30 years in the state of Florida. I'm happy at this point to pretty much have my hair in one place. I've worked about a third of the time in local governments. That's most of the perspective I bring. I've also worked in consulting, worked about half the time at the state level. I see some familiar faces in the room, some people I don't know. I'll tell you, my immediate boss is Secretary Tom Pelham. And for those of you who know Tom Pelham, know that he keeps me hopping like you would not believe. But what I want to talk about is comprehensive planning in Florida and then try to connect it to transportation planning. I think our story has been a lot of progress was made, but we have a lot of issues, a lot of problem areas in the state of Florida. We have had comprehensive planning, mandatory local government comprehensive planning subject to state oversight. For over 20 years now, Florida's growth management law went into effect back in 85. The first local comprehensive plans were adopted, 89, 90, 91. We've actually, under our law, every 7 years, local governments undertake a major update to these local plans. So we've actually had the original plans in the mid to late 90s. We went to second generation comprehensive plans. We're now working into a third generation of comprehensive plans in the state of Florida. We've gotten a lot better at it. I'll tell you, it's been much better institutionalized. When this first started, it was a cultural upheaval that there would be a state oversight role, that planning is mandatory, that is binding on land use. I think it has settled in much better, of course, with technology. It's become more of a way of doing business. There's a lot of exceptions to that, especially in Florida's more rural counties where the tradition of home rule and property rights is very, very dominant. And, in fact, that's where many of our growth pressures are happening right now. The oversight function by the state, that is the division I lead. Sometimes I feel like we're more in zoning than planning because we have an awful lot of comprehensive plan amendments in the state of Florida. Local governments, as they identify amendments, they have to send it to DCA for review. DCA issues reports, compliance decisions. We end up in a lot of litigation. Many of these amendments are actually legislatively directed. Right now, our local governments in Florida are very busy with school planning, public school concurrency. Deadlines are all happening during the course of this calendar year. Water supply planning. We have a major push underway to create not just 20-year regional water supply plans, but 10-year local government work plans. So there's certainly a whole set of sort of mandatory plan amendments, but overwhelmingly what we see are privately initiated future land use map amendments. And there's sort of a economic phenomenon that happens is you have your plan, you draw your boundaries, the land is cheaper just outside that boundary. It's well worth hiring that team of lawyers and consultants to try to push it through. So we spend tremendous amounts of time just grappling with these future land use map amendments. I recently looked at just what is the volume of plan amendments. It's somewhat overwhelming. In 2007, going through a comprehensive plan approval in this state, over 600,000 new dwelling units were approved. 350 million square feet of non-residential use. So the volumes are certainly very high. Some of the hallmarks of our law, well, the three C's, the so-called three C's. We have a hierarchical system. We got a state plan. We have regional plans. We have state law. We have state rules. And local plans have to fit within that in a consistent way. There's also a coordination. The coordination can be a little murkier. Local plans must be coordinated with MPO plans and DOT plans. And that can become a very, very big argument. I guess I see Gus Schmidt in the room, and we're having that big argument in Broward and Palm Beach County right now. What is the meaning of coordination? And then sort of my main topic is concurrency. Under Florida's system, at time of development permit, unless there's adequate road capacity, that local government is not supposed to issue that development permit. Sounds simple on the surface. There's a hundred wrinkles to it, though. Who sets these level of service standards that concurrency permitting is based on? That's always the first question. Well, local governments have a lot of discretion on their roads, but on major state roads, strategic intermodal system roads, Florida interstate highway system roads, the state sets the level of service that the local government regulates development based upon. Our concurrency program also has something new as of 2005. As the state grew and developed, we're experiencing a lot of congestion. These standards weren't being met, in particular on these major state roads. The legislature said, let's have sort of a pay-and-go system. We just can't say no. We can't say your land plan is approved, your zoning is approved, but no, we don't have capacity. We get into a temporary taking situation. So there was a proportionate fair share approach. And Florida's now had about 2 or 3 years' experience with this sort of figuring out the share for that development and allowing that development to proceed. The sort of centerpiece of our plans are the future land use element. This is Seminole County, our neighbor just to the north. And they could be pretty specific plans. And under Florida law, we got the land plan. The zoning must nest within and be consistent. Subdivisions and site plans then also need to be consistent, and building permits. We have a transportation element. And the idea in Florida is you have a land plan. It's based on a planning time frame. You look ahead 20 years and how much you're going to grow by and how much land use do you need to accommodate that growth and where are you going to put that development potential. And then you match it with a transportation plan that will serve that service population. Then in Florida, we also have capital improvement elements, and this is a requirement that has a much stronger meaning on our state law since 2005. Every year, local governments are to update their capital improvement schedule. And these things address not just transportation, but roads, water, sewer, drainage, parks, solid waste, public schools, as well as transportation. There was a frustration in the state that local governments simply weren't updating their capital improvement schedules. So the legislature said, commencing December of 2008, if a local government fails to update its schedule, well, they shall be referred to the governor cabinet for potential sanctions. And there's also restrictions or limitations on any plan amendments. So now we have a sort of stick in the law to force local governments to do this capital schedule update. But, of course, what has happened? We're in one of the worst economic crises of my career. And we've also had very strong anti-tax measures put in place by the Florida legislature and through the state constitution. So local governments now, even as they're looking at this mandatory capital improvement schedule update, they simply don't have the tools and resources right now. And, in fact, our very growth forecasts are in flux right now. So we've had this system all this time. How have we done? Well, we have an awful lot of traffic congestion. I know that. there's a lot of reasons. Going into this, there was a lot of land uses approved across our state. We're seeing things now like those older planted communities approved in the 50s and 60s. They're filling up with people. Places like Northport and Palm Bay and Cape Coral and Lehigh Acres, they're affordable housing. So you have a tremendous amount of workers who live miles and miles away from their employment because it's affordable at these older, what we thought were antiquated subdivisions. They're simply filling up. But our in Florida, we're low-density state. Even our most intense urban areas are relatively low in density. We have tremendous seasonal population. We've had this trend of increase in vehicle miles traveled. It's interesting to see how that trend might be changing right before our eyes right now. Here's a couple slides. I suspect Kathy Neal might have showed these yesterday, Kathy. Just showing us sort of a couple statewide trends. Just how are we doing? Well, lane miles is a line at the bottom. Population is kind of in the middle. And daily vehicle miles traveled is outstripping both of those. So we're losing ground as a state in terms of transportation mobility, roadway mobility in particular. Another DOT graphic showing just the major roads and where we have deficient roadways now. When we look at individual city maps or county maps of their collectors and arterials and you compare them to their level of service standards, which are set at peak hour, it's a similar picture. We have deficient roads all over the place. So here we have a law that says you got to have a level of service standard. You got to have a land use plan and a transportation plan that are coordinated and geared to achieve that level of service standard. You got to have a capital improvement schedule that's updated every year that's going to achieve and maintain those standards. And despite that, we have all these problems with congestion. One of the things we have certainly seen is some of our transportation concurrency approaches are actually driving sprawl, pushing sprawl development. Particularly in our urban centers where we have important state roads that are below the operating level. Well, that developer can come in and build, but he has got to pay his or her proportionate fair share, and it's very, very expensive. And it could be unpredictable what that amount could be. So many developers simply go where the roadway capacity is. We spread ourselves out thinner, and our great fear at the Department of Community Affairs is we're relegating our cities to automobile-dependent land use patterns. And spreading out development in a pattern in the rural area that will not be serviceable. We have some tools, some older, some newer tools, sort of exceptions to permitting concurrency. We have exception areas, something we call concurrency exception areas. There's about 30 of them in the state. Most of the city of Orlando right here is an exception area. And what it does is it sort of softens or eliminates concurrency at time of permitting. I mean, that developer still has to worry about impact fees or has to worry about site-related improvements, but they don't have to worry about the pure volume problems on the roadway network that they impact. Instead, the local government takes a stronger lead on promoting infill development, alternative transportation. We have these exception areas through most of Florida's major urban areas. Something that's newer that we're excited about and want to get more traction on are multimodal districts. I think this is where we really connect land use and transportation, since it's a very heavy emphasis on the land use planning, on the urban design, and then complementing it not just with roadways, but bikeways, pedestrian ways, mass transit. These multimodal districts, local governments can establish them in their plan. At this point, we have Destin. We have a few others in the pipeline. Shifting gears a little bit, I can't help but bring up the whole climate change discussion because I think it is sort of going to overarch everything we do in land use planning. Just in terms of CO2 emissions in the state of Florida, transportation sector way high, higher than the rest of the country. You know, we have something called the Governor's Climate and Energy Action Team, and that has been going on. We're into the second year. They're nearing completion of a Phase 2 report. They have sort of recognized that there's different strategies to deal with greenhouse gas emissions, part of which is land use. The way it has been organized before the Action Team is fuel efficiency, carbon content, and then sort of getting down more to my area, the land use patterns. Even as the governor's action team has been discussing this, well, the Florida legislature just finished in the spring, and there is a brand new law that's gone into effect, House Bill 697. So right away, those future land use map amendments that come to my department, local governments have to demonstrate to us how these are discouraging urban sprawl, how they're creating energy-efficient land use patterns, something we don't know enough about at this point. I feel like we're muddling through a little bit, as well as greenhouse gas reduction strategies. So there's sort of a new layer of consideration that's gone into our land planning as of July 1. Our law now says local plans also need to have, you know, policies and programs and commitments about greenhouse gas, about energy conservation, including structural. While the I feel like this legislation has actually, in a general way, stepped us forward, particularly in terms of greenhouse gas reductions. There's an awful lot of adaptation to climate change not yet addressed, especially sea level rise issues. Things that we are very interested in now, what the future might hold, getting beyond transportation concurrency, that these exception areas and multimodal districts are good steps, but the basic inability to meet level of service, the unpredictability and the high expense on the private sector, we're exploring whether we should replace or revise transportation concurrency through use of mobility fees. The idea is that create a reliable funding source, predictable for the developer, and it could be based on vehicle miles traveled. So that sort of development halfway across the county that's all residential, they're going to pay more. That inline development that's mixed use, that is truly capturing trips, they're going to pay less. So we would hope to sort of reverse the current economic dynamic that's at play with development in our cities versus our transitioning in our rural areas. Right now, DOT has gotten underway working with University of Florida to develop VMT methodologies. My department has gotten underway with University of South Florida, the Center for Urban Transportation Research, on sort of the legal and administrative sort of aspects of mobility fees, the concepts, and actually to test them in a community. And the thought is that these two efforts are moving along, sort of taking independent looks to come together, be coordinated next summer, perhaps for legislative action in 2010. Another important direction that is happening is regional visioning. And I know our state DOT has been a real leader in encouraging that around the state of Florida. And that's like, let's get beyond the prescribed regional plans. Let's have a little more sort of a free form regional guidance on our individual local government plans. Right now, our methodologies, we tend to look at a city in isolation, a county in isolation. And what we need is more of a top of the jigsaw puzzle box that local plans could fit among themselves, be coordinated, and actually achieve the greenhouse gas reduction strategies, achieve at least reductions in the growth in vehicle miles traveled. One of the best examples is right here in the region we're in, the MyRegion.org effort. But they have just sort of popped up around the state, not because they're mandatory, but just sort of initiatives by legislators, by business groups, and so on. So the future directions that I see in our laws is a whole renewed emphasis on the kind of growth management, I guess that was always anticipated, we've always dreamed of, but with more discipline, that we really need compact, higher-intensity mixed-use development. And I focused on the land use side, but we need the complementing mobility side to go with it. It is a template for urban development in the future. And there's factors, major societal factors, which I think part of what we got to do is get out of the way with transportation concurrency. That is demographic changes. I mean, we're all becoming older. We're going to have an older service population, more one- and two-person households. And where will these people want to live? I think they're going to want to live close to services, medical care. They're not going to live in that five-acre estate on the countryside. And then we have just the economics. The economics that has hit us all. The price of driving has just gone up, and people are seeking more places to live and work close together. So we have some very, very strong factors at play. We've got to work through our transportation concurrency questions and actually try to create that template for new urban development. And with that, I'll conclude and say thank you.